Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you if people send you the same generic conversation starters they message everyone else? Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report.
It's a report!
Yeah, we know, Akbar. Everybody is seeing the same thing that you are. That was great. If you've been listening to the Clone Wars Report for a while, you might know that I, Joseph Scrimshaw, used to say the Clone Wars Report. And then Ken Napsok would make some beautiful mouth music. Now it has become a nice sample, an audio sample from the episodes we're discussing today. And that was a great Akbar impression.
You know, I've been working on it since 1983.
It's a talent. Yeah, very good. Very, very good. All right, let's get into this. We are happy to be here discussing Clone Wars. We are starting season 4. The episodes in the arc that we are discussing is season 4, episode 1. Water War, written by Jose Molina and directed by Dwayne Dunham. So awesome. Season 4, Episode 2, Gungan Attack, written by Jose Molina and directed by Brian Kalin O'Connell. And Season 4, Episode 3, Prisoners, written by Jose Molina and directed by Danny Keller. Three different directors. Ken, did you sense the work of three different auteurs, or did it all feel similar?
It all felt similar. That's a great question and great point. It felt similar, but each episode, definitely, this was a three-part harmony of a big story here, and a great writer taking it all the way through.
Yeah, absolutely. Much like one of the themes of the episode, I'm sure we'll talk about, it felt unified, not divided. All right. We're going to dive into this summary so we can dive into talking about this big watery season premiere arc. Here's the summary, Ken. Civil War, but underwater. On the water planet of Mon Cala, the two great species, the Mon Calamari and the Quarren, have a strained but peaceful relationship. Seeking to disrupt this fragile peace and take over the planet for the Separatists, Count Dooku sends vicious Karkaradon, Riff Tamsin, to secretly murder the Mon Calamari king, Yos Kalina. The dead king's young son, Prince Lee Char, should now take the throne, but the Quarren reject the leadership of the young prince. Seeking to unify the Republic planet and prevent civil war, Padme Amidala, along with her Jedi protector Anakin Skywalker, attend negotiations on Mon Cala. The Quarren threaten to join the Separatists and bring Riff Tamsin as a Separatist ambassador. But Riff Tamsin and Dooku have no interest in peace. They convince the Quarren to launch an attack. The planet is plunged into conflict. The Jedi Council sends reinforcements. Jedi Padawan Ahsoka Tana, Scuba Trooper clones, and a topless Kit Fisto. Young Lee Char does his best to lead, but he is young and frightened. Veteran warrior Captain Guile Ackbar takes the lead, but they are defeated and driven into hiding. The Jedi Council realizes they must send reinforcements, but outfitting clones will take too long. So, citing their relationship with the endangered Padme Amidala, Yoda convinces the Gungan army to intervene. And despite their valiant efforts, the Gungans, Mon Calamari, and clone troopers are all captured. Jar Jar and Padme are forced to watch as Anakin and Kit Fisto are tortured by electric eels. Only Ahsoka Tano and young Lee Char escape the clutches of Riff Tamsin. With Ahsoka's wise guidance, Lee Char realizes he must not give in to fear and instead brings hope to his people. He encourages all the separate forces to work together, then bravely surrenders to Riff Tamsin, who has now taken the throne. Lee Char appeals to his father's former friend, Quarren chieftain Nosir Rai, to resist the manipulations of the Separatists, who only want to use and plunder their planet. All the factions work together to repel the Separatists, and Lee Char faces Riff Tamsin in battle, successfully stabbing him with his own exploding underwater knife. Tamsin blows up. Lee Char is crowned king, and there is peace, except for the raging Clone Wars across the galaxy. The end. So there's the summary, Ken.
These are works of art, and I seriously want someone to cut them out and make some sort of animated, art out of them.
Yeah, like the television show. That'd be great.
Well, that's why I paused. I was like, make an animated version of the animated. Never mind, Ken. But no, I love your summaries. I look forward to them. They're so well done. And also just really highlight what's in these episodes, which is a great thing for me because sometimes I go into an episode a little grumpy.
I understand. Well, let's get into this. What was your overall reaction to this arc? Did you love it? Did you like it? Did you struggle with it? Are you just captured by the grumpy side of the Force?
No, look, it's no secret. If you've been you're friends with me since 2011 or listened to any show that I've been talking Star Wars on, at some point I might take a swipe at Riff Tamsin. And just as I was excited to revisit Mortis when we launched the Clone Wars report here in Force Center, I was dubious about what it would be like to go revisit Riff Tamsin. So look, we often pick, right? We pick and choose what works for us as fans and what is Star Wars. You and I've had that discussion. What isn't? And I guess squids, personally, I guess I love them. I need them as the head of Rebel fleets. Sharks, apparently I'm out. But after this, I got to tell you something. This also, when we get into some of the themes, this episode hit me right where I kind of needed it with some career stuff going on. And Star Wars works in that way. And it works a magical force way. And these episodes are beautiful episodes. They really are. And overall, just this arc of a good fable of uniting people that have let themselves become divided and how to do that and how to change and grow and how to not act out of fear. So many valuable things. So I really did love these episodes. I'll get to Riff when Riff pops up.
Yeah, I mean, my overall reaction, I just got to start with Riff. like I've been saying on previous Clone Wars Report episodes, when I finally watched the Clone Wars series, it was on Netflix, 2014. I was just plowing through it, enjoying every episode, just shocked by all the great stuff that's in there. At this point, just desperate to get to Maul. And I like these episodes. They're just fine. Like, ah, cool. It's great to see the Mon Calamari and the Quarren, and there's a bunch of water episodes. Cool. And then I was a little like, shark guy. Huh. Not sure about that. I was not angry. I didn't post anything snarky. But I was like, yeah, Rift Hampson, shark guy. I'm not sure. Years of great Rift Hampson jokes for you from you, Ken.
were they great? I don't know, but I said them.
They amuse me because there's this specific kind of funny not letting something go. For me, I always think of that particular Simpsons episode where Homer is tipsy and won't shut up about the Blue Man Group. Like, he's just got a bone to pick with the Blue Man Group and he's not letting it go.
Yeah.
And I feel like Rift Hampson was your Blue Man Group.
Yes.
But I got to say for myself, I was like, not sure about a shark guy. When we watch it again, deeply immersed in Star Wars and the Clone Wars, like,
yeah,
they're called Mon Calamari.
Yes.
The way I was introduced to the Quarren as a child of the 80s was an action figure called Squid Face. Yeah. They shoot ink out of somewhere on their bodies at one point in this episode. How could a shark guy be a problem in that context? How could a shark guy possibly be a problem? That's what I felt on this watch through.
You are 100% right. And this is the, Kevin Scott, who loves Jackson, right?
Yeah.
This is how Kevin Scott won me over with Jackson, with his short story and from a certain point of view, where he just basically said, like, yeah, I'm a bunny rabbit. There's a squid guy. There's a walking dog. Like, why is a bunny rabbit a problem? And that's truth. And I had this thought watching this episode. I told myself I need to look at the why of Riff. We always say the Air Force Center, Star Wars wants you to ask why. That's big and noble. I need to take that advice for myself sometimes. And the use of a stereotypical vicious, dangerous predator in control out of sheer power and his own fears, and selling fear and selling control is peace, like, or peace is control and vice versa. It works. It's a great, important why. And then I was watching two characters I grew up with and therefore love Raddus, love Akbar. But you're right. It's squid and other kinds of squid and maybe a shrimp thrown in there. Like, yeah, it works. And it wasn't a problem for me as much this time. I still might have a joke here or two about Riff over the course of my life. But it worked on a different level this time.
Yeah, I mean, look, he also has, I think, one of the all-time Star Wars names of, a name that absolutely sounds like the most Star Wars in some ways, but also I feel like, haven't I bought a used car from Rift Hampson in the real world? Like,
hasn't he bullied someone in a high school movie? Yeah.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah, so he had to get the Rift Hampson talk out of the way, and I so agree with you about the why. I think the fact that he is this contrast to Prince Lee Char, who is too young, not very experienced, totally understandable that Lee Char would have fear. And in contrast, here is this absolute dominant, fearless predator, right? There's that contrast is really important.
Yeah, absolutely is. Absolutely is. And it's a reminder, final for me on it, reminder to just sometimes lighten up, Ken. Lighten up. It's Star Wars town.
Let go and enjoy the shark guy. There's the bumper sticker for the week. For myself, for my overall reaction to the arc, I think it was always one that was like, I like it. It's fine. I really liked it, looking at it in the lens that we have been here on the Clone Wars Report, where we look at the big ideas, but then we also just look at, like, the fun and the adventure and the adventure serial thrills. I loved also just paying more attention to the fact that this is the season opener. So it's this big season opening spectacular with just like a ton of action and very different action because it's all underwater, you know? I like watching episodes of Star Wars in general, but Clone Wars in particular that seemed really interested in playing with mixing different genres into Star Wars. And it's like, this is incredibly Star Wars, but I also feel like I'm watching the James Bond movie Thunderball and Jaws.
Yeah.
You know, there's just so much genre influence in it, and it makes it feel different and fun, and it makes the action different.
Totally, totally. You're right. Season premiere, there's a big, big fighting. We love our fighting in Star Wars, and this is big stuff.
Yeah, absolutely huge stuff. This arc, I feel like, happens a couple times in the Clone Wars where it is a battle that is a micro version of the whole macro Clone Wars. And I really like how much of that is going on where even the Jedi are starting to be aware of, Ahsoka talks about Thane. This is what Dooku does. This is what the Separatists do is they come to a place where there is a little bit of there's legitimate friction, and they erode hope and introduce fear and they convince one side that they're helping them, but all they're doing is taking over for themselves, right? And it's just a little mini summary of the Clone Wars plot.
I had that specific thought of, man, if the Separatists or Republic could just shake hands, they'd defeat Palpatine.
Exactly. Yeah. So those are some of my big picture thoughts and reactions. Really loved it. Really just enjoyed it because it does have some big ideas. I think they're, ironically, in an underwater episode, the big ideas are on the surface. But it also is just jam-packed with adventure and fun. So great arc. I'm excited to discuss it more. Let's get into the morals of the episodes that appear right there on the screen. Three episodes, three morals. The first moral is, when destiny calls, the chosen have no choice. The second moral is, only through fire is a strong sword forged. And the final moral is, crowns are inherited, kingdoms are earned. Which of those speak to you and why?
I really actually love all of them. I think my Game of Thrones heart started fluttering at the inherited earned one. Winning and ruling are two different things. But no, I'll tell you what. I really, the first one into the second one got me. And this is where like personal life stuff starts. You know, we're always appropriately and professionally vague on anything you and I are dealing with in our own lives. But sometimes Star Wars gets in, and just when destiny calls, the chosen have no choice. To me, means it still reflects destiny as a thing that takes you to a big point of choice. And you have to choose, and the burden of the choice and the purpose of the choice is still your calling, but you have been put into this position. You have no choice but to make the choice, is how I look at it. And there's like a Flaming Lips line that's, you know, you're a man, not a boy. There's things you can't avoid. You have to face it when you're not prepared to face it. Just one of those things. And I'm in a season of change where I have a lot of fear kind of creeping into my heart and soul about some future stuff and career. And it's just like, no, you are here. And you have no choice but to make a choice. You still got to make it. You still got to learn to make the best choice. But this is where you are. It's where you need to be. And I think when we look at Star Wars and stuff, we can connect to the bigger picture of destiny and the journey, and how sometimes we're only looking ahead because at the rosy things, and the thorns poking us right now are part of the journey. And this is a lot about what that second one meant to me. The only through fire is a strong sword forged. That I think these seasons of change and trials are, like I said, part of the journey. The journey doesn't begin after that. You are already on the one that you need to be on, and where you're going to get to those choices. And so those ones really pulled me in.
Yeah, I think these are all great. I think all of that is very well said, very relatable to the big themes that you're talking about, the way they impact us on a day-to-day basis, life, personal stuff, career stuff, all that, really insightful. These morals, I really like them because I feel like they're playing with a tension in Star Wars that Star Wars, particularly the prequel era, with Anakin being called the Chosen One and having a prophecy, there can be this tension in Star Wars between this idea of we are all equal, we have a symbiont circle, what happens, what affects one of us affects the others, let's work together, and then we can all accomplish something, versus who's been born with power, you know, who's inheriting power, who is the only one who can save the galaxy, kind of thing. There's that tension there.
Yeah.
And this episode, this arc and these morals kind of deal with that by saying, hey, look, everybody is born into some position. Lee Char didn't do anything special to be born into this specific tradition of ruling. But the stories being told and these morals about Lee Char, I think, take away any sort of like he's divine, you know, that he was born with power. He was born into a society that people chose to structure this way. And maybe someday they'll choose to structure it differently. And there's nothing inherently better about him than any other Mon Calamari or Quarren. He has to be forged in fire. You know, he might have inherited that crown, but he has to earn that kingdom through not destiny, but choice, you know? Mm.
Yeah, well said about the structure and while you're talking, I'm thinking of, like you said, the Anakin stuff of, with that halo of Chosen One hanging over you, and how that can kind of pervert your view of what to do with the power that you have and what you choose to do with that power. And the cheering and the chanting in support of Lee Char, the great speeches at the end, it was really uplifting. It is this three-part moral fable of how to lead and how to handle the power you have. So well said. I really enjoyed that.
Awesome. Well, thank you for the kind words. Let's move on from these Game of Thrones morals, which they very much are.
Yeah.
And dive into all the big themes, the ideas at stake in these episodes. For you, was the kind of explicit idea of hope versus fear, was that the big thing that you gravitated toward?
Absolutely. You and I have been really putting a spotlight on that for good reason. It's always there. It's so crazy.
Yeah. It pops up, you know, oftentimes in a very explicit way. Certainly the words hope and fear are often explicit in Star Wars. But even when it's not mentioned and you just look, what is a character choosing between? It is almost always in Star Wars, hope and fear.
Yeah, which just breaks down to just little level, you know, your daily steps in life. And it's not always easy to choose hope, which is part of the lesson here. Lee Char so many times could turn away or make a wrong decision out of fear. I love it. So, yeah, I wrote down is hope is the most valuable weapon against the dark side. Big theme all the way through it. And again, dark side being so many things, not just space wizards and the black cloaks with the red sabers, because clearly we don't really, other than Dooku, we don't really see that here. It's the overall dark side seeping down to the bottom. So that was the big one for me. Other ones to back that up. But yeah, absolutely. Hope, man. Hope versus fear.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like that Dooku, this big presence of fear, is just kind of the mean boss that you have to do Zoom calls with.
Yes.
Yeah, I think for me, it was nice every once in a while to have a real hope versus fear dichotomy just explicitly explored in dialogue, but also in actions. You know, I like where this whole big picture story starts, that yes, the Quarren and the Mon Calamari have differences. And it is, you know, this is one of those moments where, like, Star Wars is not trying to be naive and just say, like, hey, look, if you give me half of your pie, I'll give you half of my cake and we shake hands and everything's fine, you know?
Right.
It really establishes that, yeah, there's been tension in the past and it's a difficult journey to keep the Quarren and Mon Calamari united, particularly during these difficult times of the Clone Wars, a transition of power. And, it's exactly at that moment that, because staying united is legitimately difficult, that is the moment that requires hope. It requires enough people to say, I can imagine a future where this has worked out and where uniting is going to work. And it's an easy, easy time for fear to creep in, to go, yeah, no, I don't trust you. You're going to renege on this. You just want to dominate me, so I'm going to push back. And it's just such a great picture of the Clone Wars era, the Sith dark side perspective, that Dooku knows this is the exact moment to just smash the hope and increase the fear. So, like, it's not just Lee Char's journey. It's what's going on in the society of Mon Cala at this exact moment that is this hope versus fear, you know, pressure point.
Yeah, and that flows down to the sub theme for me of this, communication being this important tool to fuel hope, or either fuel communication breakdowns, fueling fear. It's the power of communication. Nosari and Lee Char have that moment in the beginning of yeah, you know, your dad and I were friends. Well, he's dead, and the guy you're working with probably killed him. Like, what are you talking about? Let's talk it out. And I love where it ends up, and it takes tragedy to get there. But that without that communication, you are alone. You feel alone, and that's when Dooku and the dark side gets on in there, yeah?
Yeah. And I love the lines of dialogue that make it explicitly clear that Dooku understands what's going on, right? He must not become a symbol for the Mon Calamari people to rally behind. The whispering of his name can rekindle hope, and hope is something we cannot allow our enemies to possess. Mm-hmm. Like, this is just absolutely the Sith playbook. So I like that these kind of big societal issues of hope get just centered on Lee Char, right? That the bad guys want to kill him because he could be a source of hope. And I like that there are steps in his journey towards hope. Like, first, he's kind of just willing to be a symbol, right? He has that moment where he takes a risk to make sure that the captured Mon Calamari can see him. And he has a great conch blowing moment.
Yeah.
And it's basically just like, just look at me. I'm still alive. Hope that helps. Right. And then by the final episodes, he finds that faith in himself. I think he kind of finds some hope when he actually comes up with a proactive plan of his own. Like, he personally analyzes the situation, and he's not just taking the good advice of Akbar or Anakin. He came up with the plan. And then there's this great reversal when he goes to the prison area and basically brings hope back to injured Akbar, who's like, okay, things are looking bad. And the Char's like, no, I got this. I got an actual plan. Yeah. So it's, again, one of those great Star Wars stories that doesn't just say hope. Hope is magic and will fix everything. Hope is the thing that Lee Char needs to spur him on to this action.
Yeah, there's a lot of what Lee Char goes through that I kind of spiritually connected to some of the lessons that Poe Dameron went through and what he learned and what that point was in particularly 8 and 9. I really connected to that, but just the ideas of how and when to learn. Sometimes you just got to do it, right? And I love that Akbar kind of has this, like, at the beginning, like, he's not ready. He needs training. All right, get out there. but learning among that, this idea of the wisdom of kind of true bravery. And sometimes that bravery is knowing that, you know, when to run and when to fight, which is a needle to thread for sure at times. But how some of that is just bluster and fear, and other times it is this idea of keeping hope alive, which, because that's the more important thing. Anyways, it's just a good thread that just every time made me think of some of Poe Dameron's just specific lines that he had in 8 and 9.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think this is a very similar sort of leadership journey. Mm-hmm. I also just like that there was some explicit dialogue about fear, right? Where Prince Lee Char and Ahsoka are talking when they're kind of the only ones left and they could run.
Yeah.
And Lee Char asks Ahsoka, aren't you scared? And Ahsoka says, I used to be all the time until I realized that if you make decisions out of fear, you're more likely to be wrong. Mm-hmm. And I just love that because, again, it isn't necessarily fear that's like, I can beat up everyone in this bar. I'm not scared. You know, yeah. It's not necessarily, you know, when Star Wars is talking about fear, it's not necessarily like, you know, going on the television show Fear Factor. You know, yeah. You're afraid of a snake. So be in a room with them. Like, yep, that's a kind of defeating fear. But I think what Star Wars is so often talking about more is that kind of internalized fear that eats at us and paralyzes us and must be fought all the time. Sounds like that's something that you're going through. That is literally something I went through this week. Mm-hmm. The same day I was watching this, I had a thing I wasn't doing, and I knew I'm not doing it because I'm afraid that something bad might happen once I push go on this idea, right?
Right.
And no specific reason to think it could go wrong. Just life experience that, hey, whenever you start something, it could go wrong. So it's scary to start things, you know? And that's, to me, was like just a perfect example of that kind of internal fear that Ahsoka is talking about, of like the difference between fear and concern. Like, yeah, you got a legitimate reason to be concerned. You're in the middle of a war, but you can't let fear make you paralyze you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the moment that got me, and it sounds like let's hold hands, buddy. We're in the same spot for a lot of different reasons, and you said it so well, as we always do. But you really just said something wonderful there about what Star Wars is, the kind of fear Star Wars is teaching us about. I've run into this, quite frankly, argument with personal friends over the last couple of years, where you know, it's all great being strong and tough, and I used to work a job where you had to have that kind of front face up of I'm tougher than you, and there's some stuff to that, but like, that ain't what it's about, man. And I think that's what a lot of times, I think some of the, just especially if you in the 80s, you know, we've said a lot, but just, you know, you got your Rambos, you got this, and diehards, and you know, actually I went through a diehard is a little bit about an everyman not, you know, facing his own fears in that situation, but you know, I mean, we grew up in the big blustery muscles of the 80s, and Luke throwing down his lightsaber was a different kind of strength, and Star Wars is speaking on that strength. And it comes down to these moments where I'm sitting on my couch just 2 days ago going, I don't know how I can go forward. So I think I need to make this decision, this X decision. And that X decision might end up hurting me more than taking a risk, another risk going forward. And it's that fear that destroys. And that could also be with friendships. That could also be with uniting. The Quarren might have some fears about, what do we sacrifice with ourselves if we're a little more friendly to Mon Calamari, and vice versa? And where do we get without it? And then later on, Joseph, we got an example of people, two species in the past who've already taken that leap of faith, and it's rewarding. The Gungans, Naboo, Padme, they already took those leaps to fight against that kind of internal fear. And now here we are with a new kind of hope. So it got me, it moved me, that line, those lines from Ahsoka, so powerful.
Very, very powerful. Yeah. And when you're connecting it back to Luke, you know, I think it's such a powerful moment when Luke says to Yoda in Empire Strikes Back, you're like, I'm not afraid. And the great scary Yoda line of you will be. Because I think it's the warrior discussion. I think Luke has gotten used to being a warrior and he's like, I'm not afraid. I'll run in there with my blaster and my lightsaber and I'll face anything. And Yoda's like, yeah, that's good. That's good. That's one part of fear. But I'm talking about deep personal emotional fear. Like when you find out he's your daddy and you could do the same thing, you could hurt just as many people. That's going to be a different kind of fear. And you don't understand internal emotional fear yet.
That's a great moment to really highlight. It really is. We love that Dagobah stuff. Everyone should. I loved Taika Waititi saying, as a kid, I thought that was okay. Now it's my everything in Star Wars. I'm paraphrasing what he said in the Mando behind the scenes doc, but that's the lesson on fear. And it really just shows up in this episode.
Yeah. In a really great way. Next big idea I want to talk about is the one that you had launched us into right there, which is this great idea of uniting, not dividing. And it's a different way to talk about hope versus fear in a certain way. But hope versus fear is kind of the emotions running underneath. And then there's a very specific uniting versus dividing, which is the actual practical results of hope or fear, right? The fact that Padme in the Republic is there to help prevent a civil war, to help keep things together. Prince Lee Char, even though he is frightened, being attacked, people are dying left and right, he keeps losing any sort of helpers or mentor figures. And he keeps saying in his spoken dialogue that his goal is not to destroy, defeat, push back the Quarren. His goal is still to unify. You know, he says, we are a great people and I will do all I can to negotiate peace without bloodshed. I will unite my people, he just shouts out at one point, you know. And then I think the fact that his big epiphany, the thing that kind of gives him hope and the first time where he really takes the mantle and like, I'm going to lead, is that epiphany that, oh, they want to make, the separatists want to make us feel like we're outnumbered. And every time we've gone at them with part of our forces, we are. Mm. But, you know, it was a real, there's actually more of us moment when he has that epiphany that, but together, the Mon Calamari, the Gungans, and the clones are not outnumbered if we can all work together.
Mm. Where have I heard they win by making you think you're alone before? Where have I heard that?
In that slightly debated film, Rise of Skywalker. Yeah. And I totally agree with you. I think, you know, it's awesome that the Gungans are there because it's cool to see them off planet. It's cool to say like, hey, if we're going to have a water war, you know who we need to invite? The Gungans. Like, yes. That's just cool kind of on a Star Wars, you know, galaxy world building sort of way. But yeah, the literal callback to the unification of the Naboo and the Gungans via Padme and Jar Jar is so great.
Yeah, the symbiotic circle continues, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then I like that the final victory of Lee Char is that the hinge of all of this is reuniting with the Quarren chieftain, right? Nosur Rai. I loved his quote of Dooku and Tamsin want only to exploit us and leave our cities broken and our resources depleted. That's really about dividing, you know, they want to divide and conquer. And Prince Lee Char successfully reaches out to that Quarren chieftain and says, no, let's unite.
Let's unite. Yeah. Yeah. Love that. Love everything about that there. Yeah.
Other big ideas for you?
The last one, big ideas. And then, you know, as we always, we bleed into the larger story connections, right? I put this idea of and the next generation shall lead them. I love seeing that all this kind of ends up falling. No, number one, the shoulders of Lee Char, but Ahsoka, it's that around. Love that. Love how that's the value of the importance of Ahsoka as this kind of window to the rest of the world character that they built a lot of the Clone Wars around. Not that it isn't about so many other characters too, but I love that. And it's something that's big for Star Wars. And I thought it was very present in this episode.
Yeah. That was my last thing as well. This idea of young leaders coming of age. This is obviously, you know, Lee Char's arc, but as we're watching the Clone Wars with this filter, we're really watching these moments of Ahsoka growth. Right. And last season ended with this big moment of growth where she had been pushed out on her own in a terrifying situation, you know, being hunted. And then she comes back and gives Anakin that compliment that, you know, you were with me, master. Everything you taught me has helped me, you know, basically survive, stand on my own 2 feet. So yeah. I think it's then really powerful that this first arc of season four is her seeming and feeling just so centered in her perspective, her learned experience, all that stuff. You know, it gets set up that the alleged inciting incident of all this is that Prince Lee Char is too young, and the Quorum basically going like, we're not going to listen to that guy, you know, doesn't have military training, can't live up to his father. So he really sets him in that, like, yeah, you're just a little Padawan. The same exact fears that Ahsoka had and expressed in like the Clone Wars movie in many times in the early seasons. And now it seems like she's kind of moved beyond that. And I love that when she first shows up, she rescues Anakin and Prince Lee Char one after the other, just really saying she's competent. And then that relationship that she has with Lee Char's, she keeps giving him advice and support and comfort. At one point, you know, Ackbar's like, you know, you're our hope. And Ahsoka just pats him on the back.
Yeah.
So she's there in every way, right? There's that, like, there's a contrast to Anakin, who it seems like he's mostly militarily correct in these episodes. But he just kind of like, Lee Char, we need to do this. And Lee Char goes, okay. And Ahsoka's like, hey, here's wisdom when you want it. Here's a literal bat on the back when you want it. Right. And I'm ready to support you and give you what you need. But get out of your way when you are ready to lead, you know?
That's well said. Yeah. And season three, just overall for Ahsoka, just the leaps forward that character takes. This is where I think the show overall really gels well. Season three and just the why and the need of Ahsoka just continues to show us all as fans.
Yeah, yeah. And I also just like that there's that one bit of dialogue where Ahsoka's just like, yeah, this is exactly what Dooku does. I've seen it a bunch of times, you know? So it's not just like personal growth and military growth. It's like true understanding of the galaxy and the war.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, let's move on to how these ideas in this arc are reflected in the larger story or morality or perspective of Star Wars. We already talked a little bit, but there are a lot of different connections. Where did you go to?
Well, I always love, sometimes my notes are really complete. Sometimes I forget to complete a sentence, or sometimes I just do this. I wrote hope. So, you know, hope connects to a lot of things in Star Wars.
It does.
That I talked a little bit about it, but just the weighing the gains and the losses in war, how it ties to not just episode 8, but all the Star Wars. But that's one of the things I loved about specifically episode 8, of just really breaking down and analyzing the idea of hero and sacrifice and what sacrifices really mean and how important it is to decide when's the right time. You and I talk often about, hey, Star Wars asks when is the right time to act, but you know, this is a situation where you have to act and there are going to be losses, but how to mitigate that, how to deal with that. There's that one moment where one of the Mon Calamari soldiers is shot and kind of floats back dead right in front of Lee Char. And he's like, this isn't good. And it's one of the, there's some pretty violent deaths in these episodes that just, we can talk about that one. I think we're thinking about the same one later on. I went, but yeah, I just love that these episodes weren't afraid to kind of put that in front of this leader that at one point kind of has this charge and everyone's like, no, and it leads to a great moment later on, the conch shell moment. It's not unlike a Aragorn, you know, I see fear in your eyes, you know, I love those kind of great speeches and that is earned because of some of the lessons tied to this, in the beginning.
Yeah, I love what you're saying. I really like how it connects to this idea of living to fight another day. And Ackbar at one point gives him that, like, you just learned the lesson that commanders must learn. Sometimes you have to live to fight another day, which I would say that connects to, you know, a few things in Star Wars, like the entire film Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
The entire film The Last Jedi. Much of the imperial era of Star Wars, the idea of Obi-Wan and Yoda being in seclusion, this idea of bravery doesn't always just mean going out there with a sword and fighting to the last person, no matter what. That there's a big part of it of this happens sometimes, of you lose and you need the important thing, much like they talk about in the sequel trilogy, the important thing is to keep the spark of hope alive so it can ignite into something larger later.
Yeah, I mean, literally, like, Lee Char, you're the spark. Stay alive. We need to find you.
Yep. Yep. So I really like that. I like that the explicit lines that Dooku has that we talked about earlier of, like, we cannot allow hope to live. They're very, very similar to lines spoken by, you know, Snoke and Palpatine in the sequel era about this just absolute terror of Luke Skywalker, of that Luke Skywalker is going to come back and give one speech. Yeah. And we're dead. Like, how aware that the villains are that you cannot give anything to inspire them, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, I think there's still maybe some fans who aren't sure about a Broom Kid, right?
Yeah.
About Tamiri Blegg and, like, you know, what's the power of that? And, like, that is exactly what the villains fear, right? That mm-hmm. that inspiration that it is possible to stand up and fight for what you believe in. And that's what they want to die. That's what they need to die. And the villains are very, very aware of it.
You have made time an ally of the rebellion, and time helps breed hope. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Last thing for me is this, kind of looking at it from the cultural political standpoint of this is a delicate time for the Mon Calamari in the Quarren, that's really reminding me of some of the stuff that's going on in the High Republic, right? Of yep. Lena So is explicitly trying to reach out and unify larger parts of the galaxy, be there to help people in the Outer Rim and say, look, come into the Republic. We can all help you. We are all the Republic. We'll be, you know, stronger together. And the Nile and Markian Rho in particular, understanding what all the villains do of, like, just make them not believe that, you know, stomp on that fragile hope with a little bit of fear, and then we can rise to power. It's like very, very similar to what is going on in the High Republic.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it there. Yeah. Connect to some of that stuff too. Yeah.
Yeah. How about you? Any other big picture stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. One of them was coming out of that. What you were just saying is, you know, and I touched upon a little bit, hey, they win by making you think you're alone. And I just love that moment, Rise of Skywalker. And I love when it shows up in the rest of Star Wars, but yeah, the Quarren of Mon Cala broken. Lee Char's away from his people. He's alone from his people, which also means the people away from their hope. And all this kind of reminds me, especially with the stuff going on with Dooku and Tamsin, of something that's popped up a lot lately too, because it's always present in Star Wars, is the dark side takes light side builds and heals, and that's represented in Lee Char reuniting both Quarren and Mon Calamari in a healthy way, right, in a good way, to help the Gungans. The Republic's representatives are there as well, and I just love that showing up time and time again, and how it's just fear, hope, light side, dark side is just the base level stuff, and how that also attaches to, there's kind of some greed running through this episode of in the sense of not just Tamsin and Dooku, but I thought the Quarren at the beginning, there was a little bit of, like, they want more than they actually need. And that has kind of forced them into this devil's deal out of fear. And this deal's getting worse all the time. and I just think it all is about the dark side taking, destroying and using it for itself versus building up, uniting and healing.
I think that's very well said. And I think, you know, it does relate to that big philosophical idea of the light and the dark. But it's also nice to have another one of these episodes where you see what might be a legitimate grievance. If the Quarren are like, hey, the tradition on our planet has always been that the Mon Calamari lead us both. We kind of question that. And you can kind of look at that as a neutral observer. I don't live on Mon Cala, and go, that's a legitimate concern. Maybe they should talk about it. And then seeing that the dark side, Dooku, Sidious, Tamsin, use that legitimate concern to push them into fear and anger and violence. And at the end of the day, the dark side's doing it for itself, right? That they literally just take the planet. you had a legitimate grievance. We got you to act out of fear. It didn't get you anything. In fact, we installed ourselves, and now we're going to plunder your planet. Like, literally, to your point of the dark side taking, literally take your resources as our own.
Yeah, that old meme of come to the dark side, we've got cookies. The dark side's theme should actually be the dark side, yoink.
The dark side, we'll take your cookies.
Yeah.
I think that's a great way to leave it. Does this Clone Wars arc attached to the cookie meme of the dark side? And we think the answer is yes. Any other thoughts before we take a break?
No. A lot of them connected. I highlighted already. We'll talk more about Gungans. But I love giving Padme all the credit when she deserves it, which is often and perhaps all the time. But the fact that they invoke the memories of Phantom Menace, and Jar Jar's like, nah. He doesn't say the Republic. We owe the Republic. He's like, Padme came for us. It's time to go help Padme. I just love that. And it connects just kind of the bigger Star Wars story and what we feel about Padme, too, but also the Gungans.
Absolutely. One of my favorite scenes in this episode. So I look forward to discussing it more. We'll be back in a minute to talk all thing Gungans.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we are back to continue our discussion of the great season 4 opening Water War Spectacular. There was, Ken, a lot of action in these three episodes. So did you have some favorite moments of underwater action?
Yeah, man. Oh, gosh, yeah, you're right. The list goes on. And I love sometimes my notes, I look back and go, what did I mean? Rip. Okay. So we talked about Riff up top. Here's a character I knew coming in I was a little challenged by. All right. The next big challenge, of course, is Meeber Gascon. But I can already tell you I like Meeber more than I did back in the day. Riff, though, I did forget about the viciousness of his bite attack action.
Yeah. He's no joke.
Yeah. It's good. Some good animation with a puff of like cloud of water around. It's visceral. So I'm not rooting for Riff, but I did like the attacks.
I like the attacks a lot because I think they're what make Riff really work for me ultimately, because it seems like he can swim faster and more suddenly.
Yes.
Like a vicious predator shark guy. It's just a variety, right? That the first bit of action when the first fight breaks out in the first episode, and there's a bunch of cool weapons and blasters and all that, and Riff's just swimming around biting people like a big shark, just chomping on them. Cool. It building up to one of my very favorite action moments, the smashing against the pipe, and Lee Char being like, it should be fine, it'll hold. And then that absolute just terrifying moment where his head smashes all the way through and those chompers are coming, legitimately terrifying.
It really was. And this is, again, where you go to the Y of Riff and you're looking for a kind of a vicious villain, and it's underwater. You got squids and everyone's fighting. Gungans are popping up. It does work for me more than it did now. Will Riff ever be one of my favorite characters? Probably not. But I really love how they use him in that moment. And the use of the teeth, just a couple close shots of those vicious shark teeth. It worked. He's a threat, and I got it.
Yeah, it was such a great contest where Lee Char is like, I am young, but I think I can be brave enough for... Yeah. And then suddenly he's just like, I will eat you all alive. The contrast between that military experience is, you know, Lee Char grows a lot in order to face Riff at all, much less take him out.
Yeah.
What are other moments for you?
There was one of those moments where, as a Star Wars fan, I know you feel this too, Justin, sometimes, and we all feel that just like, yeah, that's the stuff, is the lats flying in over the water. And it's similar to my feeling that I had when I saw the X-Wings in the Force Awakens trailer coming in over the water.
Yeah.
Just one of those Star Wars action moments. I'm like, yep, I'd love to be on a playground reenacting that with friends.
Yeah, and just that great lat sound effect, buzz in the water. Beautiful. Love that. Another woman in the first episode for me is, I mean, it's great to see young, action-packed Captain Ackbar. There's a moment where he's got two blasters, and he just yells and starts shooting both blasters at the same time.
That's the next on my list. I just want Ackbar screaming as he shoots.
Ah, yeah. It's an action movie. Ah, it's so good. It's so good. It's a little over the top, but beautifully so, I think.
He's got some great stuff. But later on, he's got that, you know, when they're cheering and they're cheering for you, and Lee Char's like, probably not. And Ackbar just says, then make it for you. Come on, Lee. I'm like, damn, that's good, man. Ackbar's good.
Ackbar is he's clearly a military commander and a motivational coach, which is great. So some other things for me, I really like it. There's a lot of just great lightsaber play and all that, and some great, using the Force underwater, fun to see. But I really like that moment where Anakin has to really concentrate and be covered by other people as he uses the Force to take down the communication buildings.
Right.
I like those reminders every once in a while that, like, yep, so sometimes the Jedi just need to be focused on running around and blocking the laser beams. But if they can have a beat and be covered, they can do massive things, that they're truly powerful, right? So to see him use the Force to break the foundation and take this massive building down was really cool.
I like, there was that one shot when he kind of walks into that or swims into that area, and he's kind of looking around like, all right, I can do that. I can do that. Yeah, I can break this. I love that little shot.
Yeah, absolutely great. Ton of great Gungan moments, but for me, I think the one that really got me is just their arrival, and to hear them scream, and that shot of them all diving into the water is so great. The screaming, diving Gungans.
I wrote in all caps, tell me that isn't cool. I want to go to the biggest prequel haters, probably men from our generation, let's be blunt. I want to go to them. I want to sit them down. I want to show them this. I want to go, just you tell me that isn't cool. You tell me you don't get a tear in your eye for the Gungans. Coming into battle, save the day because of what, you know, the love and care and concern and unity that Padme showed them and helped bring to their people and the Naboo. You tell me that isn't cool Star Wars stuff. It's a great, that Star Destroyer coming in, the clones looking back at them, these wonderful warriors ready to go into action to save the day. That is some and a beautiful shot. Oh, that long, the camera pulls back and you just see Gungans dropping into the water. Get out of here. That's cool. That's great Star Wars.
It was really, really great. Just one of my favorite shots in all three episodes.
Totally.
More action moments for you?
Yeah, there's a lot of Kit and Ahsoka have them, two of the letting go of a speeder into the battle droids or force pushing those little underwater speeders, skis, whatever you want to call
them. Yeah.
And there was one particular one that Kit did it, and Kit Fisto, and there was just a droid with a thud. There's a couple good droid thuds. Riff hits a droid later on. It's just almost like a rubber ball underwater.
Yeah, that's some great stuff. I think there's so many moments with Kit Fisto. I was like, oh, you're writing down everything. Stop it.
Did Kit break Tamsin's jaw? Is that with that kick and he resets his jaw? Is that how you took that?
Yeah, I think that he did some serious damage. I think that was a force punch. I don't know. Does Tamsin have? He might have multiple jaws. Do shark guys have multiple jaws? He's got multiple layers of teeth, I bet. But there's the whole the assault class Trident ship spinning and creating the water cyclone. And then Fisto and Tamsin just, you know, Kit Fisto loses his blaster, and then they just have that brutal underwater punch fest. I think the broken jaw somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I just kind of felt like this is the kind of thing that you just never know what you're going to get with an episode of Clone Wars. Like,
yeah,
watching two fish guys just have, you know, an MMA fight underwater, right?
Well, that's the thing. That's what I'm saying. It's like we all have what is Star Wars to us, and sometimes it hits it, sometimes it doesn't. And clearly, I have those moments too. But as you said, you know, go into the open mind, and you'll get to enjoy two fish guys fighting each other. Come on.
Yeah, absolutely great stuff. Speaking of Riff's teeth, it's a moment was coming. I was like, did I? Is it coming or was this a nightmare I had? And then, nope, it's real. When Riff breaks Padme's helmet by just biting it.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole open mouth over her face to crack that helmet. Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
Absolutely terrifying. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else for you?
I wanted to give Padme credit for standing in there and blasting at the Hydroid Medusas. it's a queen of action. We know that, but at this point she's a senator and, you know, it's nice to see her. She's always there and I don't want to ever not get her credit for being on the front lines. Love that little moment. I have a feeling you might have put this in comedy whimsy where it probably belongs. Okay. But I'm going to say it now. I absolutely think the Gungan waterproofing spit moment is action because it saves the day. It's funny, but it's action. Just a good old spit and Padme is saved.
Yes, it is an action moment. It's a comedy moment. It's maybe a disturbing moment.
A little calm A, B, and C, but yes.
I think if Jar Jar, let's dive into the Jar Jar spit now, the Gungan spit. Yeah. I think if Jar Jar had just spit and it was like a little small bit of saliva that sealed the hole and it was just pitched as a like good job Jar Jar.
Yeah.
Then action. For me it's gotta go in comedy when it's got all this, right? Where she says, Jar Jar sealed my helmet with his and just can't even finish the sentence and the huge amount of saliva.
Yeah.
And then we cut to a shot of Anakin. And then really my favorite comedy beat in this entire arc, a quite long shot of Kit Fisto just shaking his head.
Yeah. 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 And so
it is good stuff.
Well, I immediately thought of like two or three Gungans around a damaged Unabongo just spitting at it just to keep it safe. So
they're just open with their fluids. And that's what I feel like Kit Fisto's like. Those Gungans.
Yeah.
They really rely on their fluids for lots of things.
Yeah. Yeah. This is for me. Final one. I guess it's brutal, but Tamsin's knife bombs. And
yeah,
the kill and that final Gungan screaming right before he explodes. That was I forgot that was there. Caught me off guard. I knew how Tamsin went out, but I forgot that was right before it.
I knew that Tamsin went out, but I honestly couldn't remember how. And the visceral explosion and then his, you know, dead eyes floating right next to the camera.
Yes. And I know we know it's the Jaws ending, but, you know, and paying homage there, which is great. But yes, it was brutal. Yeah, brutal. And all those people blowing up with those bomb knives. Dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. Two other quick ones for me. I liked it when the Quarren finally jumped into action, that a couple buzz by and shoot ink from somewhere.
Yes.
And then the final one for me, during the big last battle, Akbar headbutts someone and then does the cool neck crack. Like, I'm okay. Yes.
Thank you. Love that. That's total, like, got it. Next one. Loved it.
I need a gif of that. The Akbar headbutt neck crack.
Kind of us will wake up every morning, right?
Exactly. So let's move on to moments of comedy, whimsy, and weirdness, even though we've already discussed the very best, the spit of Jar Jar. But what were some moments of comedy or whimsy for you?
Look, it's definitely canon, but we could address the, it's an attack. Love that. I think that was a good use of, you got Akbar. You know you're going to do something, which we've always talked about. It's a trap, picks up speed a little bit later on in Star Wars fandom. We weren't saying that on the playgrounds at 83, 84, but is a thing, and it should be a thing. I love it's a trap, but it's an attack was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty great. I know that you are a fan of sort of off-screen dialogue of random agitators, spectators. Mm-hmm. And there was a great one in that initial meeting when some random Quarren says, yeah, who asked you?
that whole scene needed, what is he proposing? Yes, yes, there were some great ones there. Time for a change, like was another good one.
Yeah, I just love it. Yeah, who asked you? I want to drop that into lots of different contexts. I always like smiling topless Kit Fisto. Come on, how could you not?
Absolutely. Great use of that. I also love in the beginning, I didn't write down the exact line, but when Tamsin runs up, swims up to Akbar and kind of gets in his face, and then Akbar's like, I'm going to teach him some manners. And they're like, Jell, hold when they're holding him back. I guess that was a great bar fight moment.
He said, what? What are some other moments for you?
Padme's got a great shot back at Anakin. I love a little little healthy banter in a relationship there when she says back to him, when he says something about swimming, then he says, oh, says the boy from a desert planet. Zing.
Yeah. I just hope you're a fast swimmer, Anakin says. It says the boy from a desert planet. Yeah, that was really some great banter.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really liked the council on Naboo, the Gungan council scene, and I liked how comically fast it was resolved, where the new boss, Boss Leone, is not sure about this, kind of weighing things, and then Jar Jar's like, hey, no, it's Padme. We got to do this. And then he just says immediately, thinking times are done.
Thinking times are done is now the best Star Wars quote ever.
Right. It's up there. Thinking times are done. Let's
Thinking
do this.
Times are done.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Now there was a Jar Jar couldn't hear moment. I thought, and it's Ahmed coming back doing the voice here. And I love just, you got to have some Jar Jar humor. We're in a different spot in our lives as Star Wars fans. I know you and I, but so I appreciated that too. Just him in the middle of all this action, kind of like, huh? Can't hear.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure it predates them. But it really reminded me of the Was Up commercials.
Yes, it did.
Yeah. So I think the final one for me is there's some great Kit Fisto business there. Mm-hmm. Where when they are captured and they bring out the eels, and Kit Fisto just says, ah, eels, very dangerous.
Yes, which is a Sala callback from Indiana Jones of asps, very dangerous. So. Love that. I wrote that down too. Kit's and Kit also, when he tells Anakin, less talking helps when they're trying to figure out how to escape.
Oh, yes, that is a good one too. Yeah, Kit, it's just we've seen Kit Fisto other places being a pretty steadfast, unflappable Jedi, and I like that. Yeah. That being present and also, funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. Any other moments, comedy, whimsy moments for you?
Final one is actually perfect. It's a Riff Tamsin quote, when he says, a senator, two Jedi Knights, and a fumbling amphibian. I would have thought the prince would be easier to capture than the four of you. I just, going back to what you're talking about up top and my issues coming into this in the years past with Riff, it's Star Wars. And the fact that he's just like, yeah, it's a fumbling amphibian. That's been around for a bit, but we still got Jedi Knights. You still got a senator. And you got these squids that you've been rooting for decades. Ken, just enjoy it. I just thought that moment was fun.
It is like Riff Tamsin reading the back of the Phantom Menace action figures. Like, that's pretty close to the description of the Phantom Menace that is back on the back of the Episode 1 action figures.
Completely right. Completely right.
It's just really funny, really great. Let's move into connections to canon, lore, other stories. We have a lot really here. We got just the Quarren themselves, right? From our perspective, our generation, we met the Quarren in Return of the Jedi, the action figure Squidface. I had Squidface. Did you have Squidface?
I did not have Squidface. I think I made a choice between him and the Weequay, and I got the Weequay.
Okay, yeah. My brother had the Weequay, and I had Squidface. Tessic, I believe, as he is now known. So long relationship with the Quarren. And then, of course, in the actual prequel films, we have the Senator Teeks, who departs the Republic, joins the Separatists, and is killed by Vader in episode 3. So any thoughts just on the Quarren as a character, as a culture?
It's so funny because I almost kind of take them for granted being part of the Star Wars landscape more than they were for us growing up, right? And this is one of the episodes, one of the arcs in Clone Wars overall, but this one that kind of just, you know, explores their relationship with the Mon Calamari and on Mon Cala. And I, you know, when you see him pop up again and say Mando or something like that, along with the Mon Calamari, I don't question it. And coming out of Return of the Jedi, it was just Squidface to me. And I know a little bit later, the West End games, everything kind of changes it and expands it. But I just kind of grew up with that one Quarren. And I love getting to focus on who they are and where they're from.
Yeah, and I love this relationship, you know, between the Mon Calamari fleshing them out, and, you know, we can see in the prequel films that, oh, it looks like some Quarrens have thrown in with the Separatists, so I like fleshing that out. You're right, you're so right to connect it to the Mandalorian and, you know, the great sweater Quarren, right? Or yep. It is a Quarren, right?
No, it's Mon Calamari, right? But
no, Mon Calamari, shameful, yeah. Shameful.
You've lost this round. Ding, ding.
I have. Yeah. But I at least knew I was probably wrong when I was saying it.
How many points did you bet? yeah, but I'm sure at some point a Quarren has probably looked across the aisle and said, we can wear those sweaters better.
our tentacles would look great in a sweater. But I think there is one of the behind-the-scenes Mandalorian things. They're talking about the Quarren and the Mon Calamari, and Dave kind of inserts, like, they had a whole Civil War thing.
Yes.
And I remember that that was seeming a little too deep for the table.
It was a little too deep. Yeah. Yeah, there's some great Dave stuff. You know, we always click there. They don't really have featurettes for season 4, it seems. Just a lot of Dave answering questions. And I suggest, if you're listening, watch it for these episodes, because Dave answers some questions about some stuff that was in Legends, certain cities, or even Mon Cala being the name versus Mon Calamari being the name of the planet. And Dave answers, and he just basically at one point says, yeah, so George wanted to do this, and he created Star Wars. So we listened to George.
Talking about the difference between the name being Mon Cala or Mon Calamari.
Yeah, yeah. And them changing the gender of the senator character that did appear in episode 3, and some good reasoning behind that. And the name was in honor of a friend and employee of Lucasfilm. But just a lot of it coming boiling down to, well, George said so.
Yeah, and I think that is the really, really, really great. And it's the Quarren who have the chowder in Mandalorian. That's why I was getting confused.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, with the hoses on the roof, which is just so great.
I still have problems with, but
yeah. And chowder from a Mon Calamari. What is this? Why can't I get anything right about the Mon Calamari and the Quarren today? It is a Mon Calamari who serves it, but they're Quarren's in the bar. There we go. All right. But I'm okay.
But I didn't question you. So if this was a team's competition, we both lost that round. Yeah.
I am questioning myself. So that's good. let's move on then, before I get more, say more weird things about Quarren, to the Mon Calamari themselves, but in particular, Captain Ackbar, right? Yeah. We talked about a lot of moments we enjoyed, but this is just like a huge amount of Ackbar content. Mm-hmm. He's wearing that similar suit. He has a great, it's an attack line, as you were so right to highlight. He has his baton, which is actually a blaster, which was based on the action figure accessory that Ackbar came with. According to Wikipedia, director Danny Keller had an affinity for that accessory that the action figure came with back in the 80s. and wanted Akbar to have it. So I would like to say a personal thank you, Danny Keller. That is great.
100%. No, I remember loving this back when the episodes first aired, and it reminds me a little bit of what we saw at the end of Mando, that Book of Boba Fett teaser with Bib Fortuna having his accessory as well, right? So I loved it. Now we just need a young General Madine showing up with his pointer, and the circle will be complete. Loved it. Loved seeing it in action. And kind of like, I think I'd rather have that than a big, bulky blaster. Just a stick that fires? Yeah, let's do it.
Right, and it's really got this great, like, it looks like a pointer or a military swagger stick, and it looks like you're just going to be like, well, I think we should move our troops to here, and phew, it just goes off.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought he was doing a PowerPoint, and he's blasting things. Amazing.
Yeah.
How do you feel just about the general, you know, there is kind of the endless conversation in Star Wars of, you know, going back to familiar things too often, or giving us background information we didn't need to know, what is too similar, what is too different. You know, he was admiral, but now he's captain and he's got the same suit, all that kind of stuff. Where do you land?
I always, you know, case by case basis for me is a good way to kind of approach it. And this one really works. And you could say some of it's a little cute. I don't know. He's a captain. He's not an admiral. He says it's an attack, it's a trap. But it's very organic and is who he is. There's also a moment here where Anakin says, as you wish, which is something I'd associate with Vader, right? As you wish. And it's, we've talked about that. There's certain speech patterns or something that you might say, and Anakin has them, and they will translate to him being Vader. So a lot of the Akbar stuff, it just makes sense. He's a character that exists. This is a planet and a world and a culture that exists in Star Wars. We just, by him showing up in Jedi, that show that lets you know that there's something there. He came from somewhere. And I think this is a good use. It's not distracting, and it would be awkward if they did this. You'd be asking, where's Akbar?
Yeah, right. I think it continues that spirit that's there in Clone Wars. And I think a lot of Star Wars, which is more just like, why not? This is an existing character. Don't we want to see more about this character? If you're going to bring the character back, you want to tie to what we already know about the character and then build on it. And I think for me, this all just really works because it doesn't just feel like, hey, you like the fish guy, right? So we threw him in. It's the whole thing is like, we're telling this big cultural story about the politics of this planet and how those politics affect the larger politics of the galaxy. So it feels like this is a story about building up these people's culture, where who is Akbar? Who is the kind of guy who would go all in on the rebellion? And I feel like all the character work they do, like, you see that that's the kind of guy who is going to be happy to lead you know, a large attack and be a military leader and say, you know, enough is enough. Let's go.
Yeah. Right. It tracks. It all tracks. Yeah. And again, you know, like you said, why not?
Why not? And baton blaster. That's just a thing of beauty. You mentioned that as you wish, Anakin gets electrocuted again.
Yes.
I really want to be able to interview poor Anakin on his deathbed and go, which do you hate more, fire or electricity at this point? Because
yeah,
you've experienced a lot of both. He gets electrocuted a lot.
He does. Foreshadowing Anakin. Pay attention.
Yeah. And then I looked up, because I just wanted to be clear on it for myself, the whole sad story of Prince Leechar.
Oh, I did as well, because I know. Yes. Go forward with your sad tale, because I had the same tears shed.
Yeah. So the Mon Calamari storytelling really continues in the comics and the books. There's a lot of stuff going forward, even past poor Leechar. But here's what I looked up. It's in all the Star Wars comics. Leechar, in the era of the Empire, partners with a Jedi survivor, Farron Barr, to try to resist the Empire. Eventually, it is revealed that this Jedi lied to Leechar to encourage Mon Cala to revolt. And at one point, Vader even has a little reunion with Leechar and forces him to watch as Star Destroyers bombard the planet and millions die. Leechar surrenders. Okay, just verifying one thing that I forgot to have time. Okay, great. Yeah, so there's a ton of Mon Calamari storytelling in the Imperial era going forward into the Resistance First Order War that's happens in the books and the comics. But for Lee Char, we learn in the Star Wars comic books, the Star Wars line in particular, that Lee Char, during the era of the Empire, actually partners with a Jedi survivor of Order 66 named Farron Barr to resist the Empire. And eventually it is revealed that this Jedi Barr lied to Lee Char to encourage the Mon Cala to revolt, and it doesn't go well. At one point, Vader and Lee Char have an unfortunate reunion when Vader forces Lee Char to watch Star Destroyers bombard the planet, and lots and lots of people die, and it's real sad. So Lee Char surrenders. He is imprisoned, and then in a later story arc, Leia attempts to rescue him, but Lee Char is killed by stormtroopers. However, Lee Char's final act is recording this speech of hope and resistance. Leia tries to get it broadcast. She gets blocked, but eventually another Mon Calamari does broadcast this and causes a mass mutiny in the shipyards. And that is how some of the great Mon Calamari battle cruisers get delivered to the rebellion. So it is a story of darkness and death, but ultimately Lee Char getting back to his roots and spreading a message of hope that helps the rebellion. So yay.
Yeah. All's well that ends well. Yeah. I remember seeing him on that, like the essentially his deathbed there. It's kind of sad.
Yeah. Connected with tubes and everything. Yeah. It's a dark road there for Lee Char.
Yeah. But hey, you know, hope. He provides it in the end.
Exactly. Exactly. Any other thoughts on Lee Char and that story arc?
No, he's it jumps out. You're glad jumps out at you. Glad you brought it back up there. Yeah, no, I do like Lee Char as a character, and I love these other cultures and worlds that are part of this landscape. I love taking some time to focus on them, because I'm the type that's kind of wondering, What are they doing during the Battle of Hoth? Not that I expect them there at Hoth, but just like, what's going on there? Are they just having chowder on their planet? Like, what are they doing?
Yeah. No, and I just, it's one of the examples of like, yeah, the Star Wars landscape is deeply connected. This, one arc in Clone Wars, and then years and years later, these several arcs, big important things in the Star Wars comics, and it's all connected. Any other canon or lore connections that you wanted to highlight?
No, I just did that. You talked about Anakin and being electrocuted and everything. And all that comes out of the sequence of him being so desperate to save Padme. We need to save Padme, he yells at one point. And just the kind of a canon, emotional canon, but also just canon connection to his panic and passion driving him to do things that hurt him, right? And I just kind of like seeing that kind of mini drama break out there.
Yeah. It is one of the things that I always remember from this episode, that there is that let's check back in on Anakin's absolute panic that anything could ever happen to Padme.
Yeah.
So I think that they do such a good job in the Clone Wars of like, not every episode is about like, let's have an episode that examines this big through line, but they check in on them. And that's a great checking in moment.
Yeah, indeed.
Was there anything that you disliked or questioned?
Look, at the end of the day, it was a great use of a character design. And guess what? Riff doesn't survive. Now, I know there's more of his kind out there, and they pop up every now and then in some books, I believe. I was looking, trying to trace some of the appearances. If Filoni wants to, in the Ahsoka show or season 9 of Mando, challenge me by having a live action version of, what is it, a Carcadon here, I'm game. Let's do it. Let's figure it out. Let's see how this could actually work. As I said, Riff will never end up being my favorite character, but they did such a good job with the use of the character. What is it, Gary Anthony Williams, I wonder.
Yeah,
just such a good job voicing him. So at the end of the day, yes, I can sometimes question why a shark was in Star Wars, but at the end of the day, like you said, why not?
Why not, indeed? Yeah, this is a great discovery, because Riff Tamson is such a great voice, and I was like, oh, who did that voice? And realized that I think I've written a line of dialogue for the actor who played Riff Tamson, because he was on the show Tig Tone that I wrote for. And like, what a nice thing to have.
See?
Kind of, written a line for Riff Tamson.
Love it.
I'm sure Gary Anthony Williams doesn't go around saying, yeah, that's I'm Riff Tamson. Yeah. But you never know. He should be very proud. It's a great, great performance. Yeah, I love Riff Dancing. I would love to see more of, if not Riff, definitely the Carcadones. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you heard it here first. Force Center is requesting a Disney Plus show about Riff Dancing. That's what we're saying. I think everything worked really well for me with that that Gungan council scene. I really love that. Mm. There's a small part of me that wanted Obi-Wan. Yeah. To be the one making the presentation. It makes sense. Yoda's the, you know, the head of the council. We got that little scene with Obi-Wan going, oh, Naboo. But there would have been something cool, even in hologram form, of seeing older Obi-Wan standing back in that court.
And then, of course, maybe Obi-Wan says, hey, where's Boss Nass? Is he retired? You know, because in Ken's mind, Boss Nass retires to a happy life. But.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Anything that we have not talked about that you wanted to touch on?
No, man. We really went in on this episode, these episodes, and they deserve it, and we hit it all.
Yeah, yeah. Two very small things for me. I really like Jar Jar's slick underwater outfit. Like, Jar Jar looks cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Justice for the Gungans all the way around.
Yeah, and final thing for me, just to shout out, is the sound design is always great, but just all of the different underwater sounds, just the design of this episode was great and really made it feel different and add variety to the Clone Wars.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
All right, then, the most important question of our discussion, Ken, if you could have a figure or toy inspired by this episode, what do you want?
I got two things here. We need first some official, and we may have touched upon this before, but I think we do need Kit Fisto Star Wars swim trunks. I think it's time. maybe we won't stop talking about it till we get it. And then we also need the Riff Tamsin hand shark as promoted by Vin Diesel.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That is super, super great. Mm-hmm. I am all in on the Kit Fisto swim trunks. I would like Kit Fisto underoos with just a green shirt because he's topless. Yeah, I want Riff Tamsin content. There is not a 3 3/4 figure. I would love an actual 3 3/4 Riff Tamsin figure. And then for Halloween, Ken, for the spooky season that we're in now as we're recording, over the last couple of years, these 12-foot skeletons that you put in your yard have become very popular.
Yes.
I would love a 12-foot Riff Tamsin. And Star Wars fans would be like, that's a giant Riff Tamsin. And the vast majority of the world would just be like, why do you have a shark guy in your yard?
See, it's amazing. Where I live in Burbank, every other house has a 12-foot skeleton just staring at you. And Grace kind of wants one, too. We're not getting one. But we're not. We have skeletons and like some antler creation hanging on our door to ward off spirits. This is to your point. You know, I also don't like the puffer pigs, or used to not like the puffer pigs from Star Wars Rebels until someone got me that puffer pig toy. Then it was hard for me not to like them. And I think a good, whether it's the hand shark Riff Tamsin or the 12-foot Riff Tamsin for your yard, I think it would make me appreciate Riff even more.
Yeah, you can't dislike Riff Tamsin when he's in your yard or on your hand, right?
Yep.
All right. That was so great to discuss this awesome, huge water war arc. Next up, we have one of the increasingly rare one-episode stories.
Yes.
We're going to be discussing season 4, episode 4, Shadow Warrior. Looking forward to that. Ken, what should the moral of this episode of our podcast be?
The moral should be that when you're swimming around with the sharks, you're going to have some tough choices. Just press record and do it.
That's right. Listen to the hope when you hit record. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, we are the Force Center Podcast, and you can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. Let us know your own Riff Tamsin thoughts. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center, and we're available on a lot of different spots. Just search and you can find us, but Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and TuneIn and more. We're there. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. And from there, you can access our private Discord server where you can talk and celebrate Star Wars with Force Center friends 7 days a week. I am at Ken Napsuck or KenNapsuck.com. If you're local, just got added to a comedy show over at Flappers on October 27th. Information will be on that website. And then I will be in Washington, D.C. in December with Mark Ellis and others. So get ready for that. We're going to try not to reenact Die Hard 2 when we're out there. Just
The scene I remember from Die Hard 2 is the bad guy training in the nude. So that that just gave me a lot of pictures of your comedy show. Anyway, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for links to all of the other comedy adventures I've had, comedy albums, shows I've written for, and my podcast, Obsessed, where if you are a James Bond fan, our most recent episode is my wife and I discussing the new Bond film, No Time to Die, so check that out. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Riff Tamsen, for the Mon Calamari who wears a sweater, and the Mon Calamari who sells the chowder, this has been the Clone Wars Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.